Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble. I'm still at work in Aberdour in Fife, and I'm delighted this afternoon to welcome three colleagues to talk around a project on social pedagogy. We're going to be live for the next 45 minutes or so at edutalk.cc. If you're listening to the live stream, you can get in touch with myself or any of our three guests today. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, you can post a comment or question for our guests. And if you include the hashtag edutalk, edutalk, then I'll be able to pick that up and pass it on to the discussion. So I'm delighted, as I say, to welcome three colleagues this afternoon. We have Gabriel Eichsteller, and hopefully pronounce your name right there, Gabriel. Gabriel's from Thempra. We also have Claire Jackman, who's a fostering support worker at Care Visions, and Dougie Gould, who's a residential childcare worker at Care Visions. So welcome to the show, everybody. Can I just check that you can hear me okay and that the sound is fine?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, that's always a relief, and as a regular listener to the show know, it is quite a technical merry-go-round to get everything set up to broadcast these shows. So it's fantastic that through the power of Skype and various other kind of low-cost technologies that we've managed to put these excellent events and shows together. So delighted to welcome Claire, Dougie and Gabriel to the show. And maybe just start off just briefly just by asking each of our guests to introduce themselves and in terms of the professional work and maybe the organisation that they work for. So I'll ask Gabriel to come in first.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having us on the program. My name's Gabriel Eichsteller, David. You pronounced that perfectly fine. I work for Thempra Social Pedagogy, and we're an organization that I set up together with a colleague of mine, Sylvia Holthoff, in 2008. We did a project for the National Center of Excellence in Residential Childcare back then, and the idea was there to explore the potential benefits of social pedagogy through a training course. And we then saw that there's quite a lot of potential that social pedagogy has in order to inspire practitioners and to help them develop their practice and to further enhance what it is they're doing. So the pilot project went down really well, and we thought that social pedagogy really offers that kind of coherent framework for holistic practice. And it just puts huge emphasis on creating learning opportunities and on authentic relationships, which I think people could really relate to. So we wanted to be able to support the development of social pedagogy more widely, and therefore just decided to set up Thempra as a social enterprise. We've mainly been working on social pedagogy projects with a number of different organizations in England and Scotland and in Northern Ireland. Mainly that work is doing training courses, but also doing team development sessions and strategic development to ensure that there's a whole systems approach within organizations. So that's most of the work that we've been occupied with. But within Thempra, we're also trying to raise more awareness and understanding for social pedagogy through articles that we're writing or book chapters that we're contributing to and other publications, and by coordinating the Social Pedagogy Development Network, which is a forum for professionals interested in social pedagogy. So that's just to give you a gist of what Thempra is about.
Okay, thank you very much, Gabriel. Just ask Claire to come in at this point.
Hi, I'm Claire Jackman. I work for Care Visions in the fostering side of the company. I do a lot of independent therapeutic work with the young people we have within fostering and supporting the foster families. Care Visions is an expanding company. We care for more than 120 children and young people in Scotland, around 50 in residential childcare. And we're a forward-thinking company and really keen to explore and take on board social pedagogy. We're currently using the Sanctuary model, which is our sort of main model that we use, but I think social pedagogy fits in really well with that. So it's been an interesting experience for us.
Thank you. And Dougie, what about yourself? Can you tell us a bit about your background?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, my background is actually in teaching. I trained as a primary teacher about 4 years ago before deciding that that's not what I wanted to do. And I stumbled across residential care through the job search, and since then have realised that there's just an incredible amount of professional work that gets done in Scotland around caring for its young people with social problems, and particularly in my company, we look after a lot of young people who have suffered some sort of trauma in their life. My experience in the last 3 years has been predominantly working in small houses, small residential homes, where we've cared for 3 young people. And these young people have had various sorts of trauma, whether it be through their parents having social problems that have carried through to the young people themselves, or different learning needs that they may have had or developed over the years of not getting the proper education or care when they were in their infancy. And so that's the background within which I've been a residential carer, and from which I was looking to expand my knowledge when I heard about this opportunity to go to Denmark and to learn more from the pedagogues over there.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dougie. Just to give an outline of how the show is going to pan out over the next 30-35 minutes, brief outline of what social pedagogy is, or social pedagogies. Then we've got some information on the actual programme that was engaged with, and we're mentioning about how this had an international dimension. So looking at a kind of background to the European Union's Leonardo Mobility Project, and then we'll find out more about the actual experiences that Claire and Dougie had from taking part in, for example, the placements. And then how they've actually applied their learning to their practice or to their setting. I will probably come in at something I'm fascinated about, and through attending a couple of events at the Kibble Care and Education Centre in Paisley, I've become, you know, somewhat aware of the notion or notions of social pedagogy, and it's, I'm sure I'll come in with a couple of burning questions later on. And then towards the end, we'll be able to extend an invitation to listeners to get involved with the Social Pedagogy Network. Again, I'll just repeat at this point, if you're listening to the live broadcast of this afternoon's show, then you can email with any comments or questions for Claire, Gabriel or Dougie. You just email Edutalkr, that's EDUTALKR, at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just include the hashtag Edutalk, EDUTALK, and if you're listening to the archived version at a time and place of your choosing at edutalk.cc, then you can leave it on the website or get in touch via email or Twitter. So I think maybe I should take a minute at this point, Gabriel, and just give us a brief outline of what we're talking about here this afternoon.
Yeah, social pedagogy is basically a tradition that can be found in quite a lot of European countries. So it's not a brand new concept or anything, but it has long-standing roots in countries like Germany or Denmark, other Scandinavian countries, and other more continental European countries. It's often evolved as an academic discipline and a profession for those who work with children, young people, in a care or in an educational setting, quite often in a more informal educational setting. So that could be play work, youth work, residential care, obviously. But it could also be working with adults who have various forms of disadvantage, who might be migrants, who might be experiencing drug or alcohol misuse, and so forth. So social pedagogues work in a various range of different settings. But overall, social pedagogy draws on core theories from a range of different related disciplines, such as education, sociology, psychology, and it has a strong philosophical root as well. So in essence, to sum it up, social pedagogy is very much about enhancing people's well-being, about creating opportunities where learning and growth can take place. And obviously that's not just limited to childhood, but we see every individual as having that potential to grow and to further learn throughout the entire life. And obviously there's always something that we can do to kind of help a person feel healthier, feel better about who they are, feel happier with their life. So that's not something that is just limited to working with children, young people. But as I say, it could also even work within a context of caring for older people, for example. What's really important about social pedagogy is that it's based on humanistic values and on principles. So it has a lot to do with my own personal beliefs as well. One of the key things that social pedagogues like to talk about is the idea of the rich child. So rich not in terms of children being financially rich, but actually children having a lot of richness, a lot of potential, a lot of strengths and competence that they can offer to us. And it's really about seeing that potential, that uniqueness within, and nurturing that through our interactions. So it's important that we actually have a strong, positive relationship in which we engage with that child, in which we're two equal human beings, and in which I'm very mindful of that child's dignity, in which I'm very mindful never to humiliate a child or another person. But to kind of widen it up a bit as well, social pedagogy isn't just about me and that individual child. It's also about giving that child an opportunity to gain some social skills, to interact with others, to see themselves as part of society, to take responsibility for others. So it means there's a wider social justice element to social pedagogy as well. It's not just about the individual, but it's about the individual within their social context. And overall, we want to address and to prevent and want to be able to find educational solutions to social problems through social pedagogy as well.
Thanks very much for that introduction, Gabriel. I'm just wondering, can you say a little bit about the history? I mean, my reading of this is that it's an approach to learning and relationships that actually, you know, did gain root in Scotland by, and has it always been there? Has there always been a rich seam, maybe within non-mainstream settings, or maybe within particular local authorities within mainstream schools? Or is it something, again, my sense is that it's something that's coming back. It's maybe now's the moment for it to, you know, to fit in. I mean, I'm thinking that it seems to, the principle seems to fit very well with the principles of the Curriculum for Excellence in Scotland. Can you say a little bit about the historical context and the Scottish context presently?
I think you're absolutely right in that it will not sound brand new to professionals in Scotland, and I think there's a long-standing kind of philosophical, educational philosophical and social philosophical tradition in Scotland as well that fits quite nicely with social pedagogy and some of the more recent developments you've named, the Curriculum for Excellence, but also things like the Kilbrandon Report fit in very nicely with social pedagogy, I think. We've started doing some work in Scotland back in 2008 together with Sycamore Services, and back then Tim Foley asked us to come, and he'd heard about social pedagogy in the 80s and had been very much impressed with it, found that it was very much a great metaphor for what he understood to be the Sycamore way. So, you know, I think it shows that within Scotland there have been influential people that have always kind of been able to relate social pedagogy to their own philosophy, to their own kind of theoretical way of seeing the world, but also to the direct practice of working with children and young people, to the relational aspect. Since then, we've done A bit of work as well through CIRC, now CELSIS, who've been very interested in social pedagogy and are actively promoting it throughout the sector. And we've done some work with Kibble and on the Orkney Islands and, obviously with Care Visions now as well. So there is a widening interest within Scotland around that. I should probably also mention that the Campbell community in Aberdeen, for example, has been very, very active around it. And together with the university in Aberdeen, they've developed a BA program in social pedagogy. So there are also these kinds of traditions that are very, very much alive in Scotland, and where social pedagogy is really just a metaphor or a different term that might feel more continental European, but can actually be related to similar traditions in Scotland.
Okay, thanks for that, Gabriel. We're moving on in a moment to hear Claire and Dougie's experiences of the mobility project. So I'm just saying, so the title of this project, a group of Scottish care and education professionals have engaged with. It was the Leonardo Mobility Project, and it's a European project. It's certainly something that I would imagine not only myself but many listeners to Radio IGTalk will be entirely unaware of. So it'd be nice to get a bit of background there, Gabriel, before we hear from Dougie about their experiences.
The great thing is obviously that the European Union has lots of really excellent projects that enable international exchanges and visits, placements, internships, these kinds of things from one country to a different country. And Leonardo Mobility, for example, is funded through the Lifelong Learning Program. So actually it's a pretty much fully funded opportunity that pretty much anybody in this country has. And you can go on their website, leonardo.org.uk, and find out much more. There's some really good events as well to kind of help organizations understand what the opportunities are. So we applied for some funding to do a project that would give 24 participants from Lancashire and from Care Visions an opportunity to go to Denmark and spend 2 weeks in Copenhagen and to do two placements. The idea behind that was that we wanted practitioners to be able to kind of really directly experience what social pedagogy feels like in practice, and to really get immersed in that kind of cultural aspect of it. You know, obviously Denmark has a long-standing tradition of social pedagogy, and it's something that you can feel within the wider society. You can feel in the way that Denmark is very child-friendly, it's very family-focused, and all of those things are reflected in the practice. So we wanted to give people that opportunity to actively experience that. So basically, the project was structured that the first group of participants went over in March, and the second group of participants will go over this November, so we're doing it in two flows. And basically, our contact in Copenhagen, Charlotte Fearing, who works with Empera, she sourced different placements. She sourced a couple of placements for participants to kind of experience a setting where you work with very young children. So a daycare setting, but then also to have the opportunity to work in the second placement in a more familiar setting to people. So to work in a children's home or a home for young adults that might have been in the process of moving on. So to actually be able to get an insight into how do pedagogues work across different settings, might be similarities between the different settings, what might be differences, and so forth. And all of that was also then followed up with reflective sessions that we held while we were in Copenhagen. So we made sure that before each placement, in the middle of the two placements, and after the second placements, we all came together as a group and had an opportunity to explore the different experiences, make sense of them, and to find out how people can actually take back some of the learning to carefully reflect on the cultural context. And yeah, to kind of tease out what are the things that we really want to take back. How does this relate to what we are doing in our day jobs? And yeah, to actually learn as much as we could.
I'm going to try and bring Doogie in at this point. I think we've got one or two wee technical hitches on the line. Doogie, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Right, that's fantastic. We lost you a moment ago, but it's clear that we've lost now, so I'll try and bring Claire back in shortly. Doogie, I'm just wondering if you can maybe trace this development opportunity, I suppose, right back to the start and tell us your story.
David, I've been through somewhat of a kind of spiritual experience, I have to admit, with the Denmark trip. And I want to stress, first of all, that my company were so supportive in helping me make sense of what I experienced, because it was really difficult for a while. When I came back, it was like hitting the earth with a bit of a bang. And I know that all your listeners won't have the opportunity to get out to Denmark and experience what I experienced. So what I want to make sure is that I'm getting across to everyone here, you know, some sort of real learning that can take forward. And maybe my focus could be on what I've tried to apply since coming back. But just to give you a brief insight into what I did experience, my trip was broken into 2 weeks of two different placements. My first week I was observing pedagogues in the Green Giraffe Nursery in the heart of Copenhagen. It was in an area called Norbro, which was a very multicultural, multi-diverse area, much like where I work in Glasgow, in Govan in Glasgow, and it had very similar social conditions and social concerns related to poverty. So it was great to go and get an insight into how they'd done things differently. I suppose the first impression that I had was something that Gabriel's touched on, which is this very holistic experience that invoked all of the senses, I suppose, because there's a certain serenity about the nursery that I walked into that I have experienced in nurseries in Scotland as well. And it's just something that young children seem to bring out of you. They seem to bring out a peace and a calm quite often when they're having fun and when they're enjoying themselves. And certainly the pedagogues were extremely proficient in allowing kids to be kids, I would say. They, as practitioners, were very keen to stress that they wanted to get into the rhythm of the child. There was very little structure within the day, as in lessons or sitting down time listening to teachers or anything like that. It was very much more about going with the flow of the child and being in tune with what their needs were. The first 3 days, I saw very little organised teaching at all in the more, maybe sort of more traditional Scottish sense of lessons. I saw a lot more of kids coming into the nursery room. They were assisted with getting their hats and jackets off if they needed that assistance. And after that, they were allowed to play, allowed to come and take time with the pedagogues, allowed to eat when they wanted to eat. And when they were tired, they were assisted in sleeping. And if that meant that they had to sleep the whole day, they were allowed to sleep the whole day. The pedagogue's role was very much as a guide rather than a teacher, although within that guidance there was elements of teaching as and when they came up. I remember one little boy in particular who was a bit more boisterous and a bit more physical than all the rest of the kids. And the pedagogue had chatted to me prior to the boy joining the class about, you know, be aware of how I work with this child and how I encourage him to increase his own awareness of how, when he charges about the room and bumps into other children, how it affects them. And so I was looking forward to seeing how he would go about this. And the pedagogic approach really came out in his reactions to this young boy in particular. What could only be described as bullying certain children physically because he was more dominant than the rest, and on a couple of occasions pushing children and potentially fighting with them. The pedagogue's verbal response and tone was extremely calm. His reaction was focused on increasing that child's awareness in the moment of what they'd done to the children around him, and asking him how he felt about the way this other child who was crying looked, and encouraging him to realise that this child was sad. And that's just one little example of how maybe that differs to my experience growing up in nursery, which was in early school, which was a bit more. I hope I'm not being unfair here, and possibly I'm speaking about my own a long time history ago. I'm sure nursery professions in Scotland do things a lot differently now, but a bit more concerned with telling children off, maybe, and a bit more about teaching the child what not to do rather than focusing on increasing their awareness. I hope that makes some sense, David.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting point to close on there. And thank you very much for your input so far, Dougie. I'm going to just ask Claire to come in at this point. I think we've managed to get Claire back into the conference call.
You lost me for a bit there.
Claire, can you say something about the journey that you've been on so far, and talk about your time, your study visit?
I mean, it was an amazing opportunity to be able to take part in the mobility, and we were given options as to which placements we chose, and the one thing I was really keen on was a Forest Kindergarten. So I chose that for my first placement, and then the second week I was in a residential home for children, well, young people, ages 14 to 23. So my first placement in the Forest Kindergarten, a place called Stockholmsgarth, was the most incredible experience of my life. It was a really fulfilling week. I thought I knew what it means to be holistic. I thought I was fairly holistic myself, but until actually experiencing being within that place with these pedagogues and the children, and there was such a calm, relaxed, loving environment that I really hadn't experienced before. The children played so happily, played independently from adults. There was a definite structure to the day. You know, they started off the day once they'd taken off all the little snowsuits. They would have something to eat, and then everyone would sit in a circle on the floor, including the pedagogues and myself when I was there. But the children were allowed to cuddle up to the pedagogues or sit on their knees, and they'd go through, similarly to nurseries in this country, they'd go through days of the week, months of the year, what the weather was like, that sort of thing. Maybe sing a song, somebody would play the guitar, and then quite often they'd have a painting session. And the first day I was there, Martin, the pedagogue, who actually had his honeymoon in Scotland and loved Scotland, put on some Scottish music and asked the children to paint what they heard and how they felt. To start off with, I was amazed how calm the children were when he was preparing the paints and setting everything up. One little boy who was sitting at the end of the table didn't have enough room for his paper. So Martin, the pedagogue, asked him in Danish, but I kind of understood what he said, if he could wait until there was space. And I was thinking, oh, here we go, you know, there's going to be a bit of a tantrum here. But he just sat so patiently, so calmly, didn't interrupt, annoy any of the other children while he was waiting. And then just watching the children, one little boy who was sitting next to me, he was just so absorbed in what he was doing, so focused. And, you know, the brush strokes really were going in time with the music, and he was being really thoughtful about the colours he was using. And whereas the children of a similar age, who I know in this country, tends to be a muddy mess, and all the paints, all the colours get mixed in together. They were very aware of keeping their colours separately. Some were painting rainbows and flowers, others just, you know, abstract. So that was an amazing thing to see. At lunchtime, the children are encouraged to help themselves to their own food and their own drinks, and tidy up afterwards. And they really didn't have to be asked to do that. You know, seeing a little three-year-old girl scraping off a plate into the bin and then stacking it neatly on a trolley without being asked was quite incredible. Every day, whatever the weather at the Forest Kindergarten, the children go out to play for 2 hours. That's when the pedagogues take it in turns to have their breaks. And I was amazed, most days there were two, possibly three pedagogues outside, if you like, supervising the children, but they didn't really have to do much supervising. With maybe, I don't know, 30, 35 children. And because they were outside, and it's quite a large area, it's not in the middle of the forest like I thought it would be, but it's a nice sort of woody area. And they purposefully make little huts and collections of trees so that the children have private space to play on their own. I was talking to one of the pedagogues, and she said, oh, in the summer it's lovely because when the leaves are on the trees, there's a really nice circle of trees and the children can play in there without us seeing them. And I said, well, don't you need to supervise? And she said, no, they need their own space to themselves. And because the children were allowed to play and be free and explore their own worlds and climb trees if they wanted to, they were just so happy and calm and relaxed. There really wasn't much need for supervision. And if conflict did arise, it was seen as an opportunity to help children to understand how to resolve that conflict. But I have to say, I think I saw maybe one child push another child the whole time I was there. Another thing that amazed me was I observed children whittling sticks with these huge, big, sharp knives, which is something we definitely wouldn't see here. And I think that's another thing. You know, we have become quite risk averse in this country, for good reasons. I did ask about risk assessments when I was speaking to her, the manager of the kindergarten. And she said that the way they manage risk is when parents enroll their children into the kindergarten, they sign a parental consent saying that children can go on trips and be bathed by the pedagogues if needs be, and, you know, take part in various things. So there isn't actually any need for risk assessments, which gives them that freedom to allow children to climb trees as high as they want and whittle sticks with sharp knives and just really explore. And then if it's a nice sunny day, they don't have to put in a risk assessment to take the children climbing up a hill. And one day, the whole purpose of the day was to climb up a hill and roll down it, which was fantastic. And the children are so helpful. The day we did that, it was quite a steep, muddy bank. And thankfully, I was in an adult snowsuit, which wasn't a too good a sight. But anyway, and I actually fell flat on my face and started sliding down this muddy bank, and looked up to see a five-year-old girl offering me a stick to pull me back up, which was just an incredible thing to see. And then the two of us then started helping all the other children, and there was real teamwork going on, but it was a five-year-old that had started that off. So, like I say, it was just an incredible experience, and I'm probably going on a bit too much now, so I'll try and tie this up. But my final day, I found I really understood what it did mean to be in the rhythm of the day and the rhythm with the children, and I really felt that I was in that place myself after 4 days, and just flowing with the children and not sort of having massive plans to do with them, but just picking up on what they were doing and encouraging them to sort of maybe take it a little bit further. When on the Friday, my last day, a couple of girls were dancing in front of a mirror, sort of doing ballet dancing. So I started joining in, and then turned it into yoga moves and ended up doing a little yoga class with about 10 children, which wasn't planned. And, you know, I've never taught yoga, but the children loved it. So, I learned so much. And like I say, until I experienced being in that environment, I really didn't understand what it meant to be holistic.
Thanks very much, Claire. That's been absolutely fascinating. If you're, for those of you who are listening in live or to the recording, you're listening to the reflections on a Danish holistic or reflections on Danish holistic childcare practices from a group of Scottish care and education professionals who have been learning about and developing skills around social pedagogy. We have on the show this afternoon Claire Jackman and Dougie Gould of Care Visions, and Gabriel Eichsteller of Thempra. Again, just finally, we're coming into about the last 10 minutes or so of the show, but you can email us with comments or questions at edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, you can use the hashtag edutalk. Just before I come in with a couple of questions, can I just say sometimes it's, instead of it being kind of question answer at this point of the show, even if we've got any sort of pregnant pauses, so to speak, you know, Gabriel, Dougie, Claire, just feel free to come in at any point. I'm just wondering, maybe firstly, Dougie, and then Claire, you know, what, just briefly, you know, how is this impacting on your work with young people?
David,
this is only the start of your learning.
Yeah, that's exactly it. This is, I feel, been an opportunity that is going to only sort of grow within me as the months and years go on in my profession. I would say that the initial impact on a personal level of my trip and of my experience of how the Danish go about their care of children is that I am so much more confident now than I ever was before. And that confidence just came from a couple of things. An awareness that we in Scotland are doing so much right. And I just want to emphasise that. I work in a team of 8 other professionals in my place of working, Care Visions, and I have been able to reflect and what part of the report that I've written as a follow-up to my exchange to Denmark is focusing on how many skills and knowledgeable professionals I work with that maybe we just need to find a way to go over this possibly Scottish thing about not feeling confident enough, or maybe that's just me, but I really think that we do such amount of great work for the young people that we have in our care, and that so much of it is pedagogic. Maybe the difference with Denmark is that they are able to put a name to it, and part of that, I think, comes from the fact that they, as pedagogues, do a 3.5-year degree course before they are employed into any organisation. I am so much more at peace with the decision-making processes that I go through on a daily basis. I feel more empowered to make decisions as a practitioner, and I feel less reliant on, you know, checking in with management or anything like that before I make them, with the knowledge that what I'm doing is trying to be the best guide I can possibly be to the young people within my care. I just feel extremely privileged to be working with the young people that I do now, and I think I always felt that, but never had quite had the confidence to match. And an experience like Denmark, and seeing how with a few added tools and with a bit more professional language, I can take the raw talents that I have, if I have any, and give a name to them. And I think that for me has been a profound experience of just being able to name what I do, and if it's calling it pedagogy, actually realising that the model of therapeutic care that we use within Care Visions, which is called the Sanctuary model, is very, very, very conducive to seamless within any teaching that I've experienced around pedagogy, and I would say that they both work hand in hand, and that if there's any of my colleagues that are listening to this, they should definitely start believing in themselves and believing in what we do, because we do a great job.
And Claire, if I just bring you in at this point, you know, can you say something about how this process or series of experiences is impacting on your professionalism and practice?
Yeah, I mean, very similar to Doogie, really. I completely agree with him that we are doing a really good job here, and, you know, particularly Care Visions, I think our practices are great, and the Sanctuary model that we use, you know, we are very, very informed in how to work with children who have experienced trauma. Like with Doogie, I feel a lot more confident now since coming back. I know one of my colleagues mentioned about the softer ones in the team who've always been perceived as being the softer ones and maybe the weaker ones in the team, are now feeling more confident and thinking that they are doing the right thing and to develop their sort of natural ways. And I've felt that in the past. I think we're quite scared of the word love in this country, particularly in social care, but I felt so much love in Denmark. And, you know, when I'm working with the young people I work with, there is a love there. And I don't feel afraid to feel that and to show that. I'm not expecting it back. But they need to experience that and to feel valued. The second placement that I did, which I didn't really speak about, Rumaksbeng, which was with older children, I was very aware how in tune they were with their emotions and their capabilities. And they seemed really focused on their futures, and there was a lot of talent there. And even the young people who maybe hadn't got to the level of one girl I met, she was training to be a gym instructor. Another boy's an incredible rapper, and he's got a song video on YouTube, which is amazing. They are very, very talented. But even the young people who haven't got to that stage, one young girl I met, she's been on a real journey the last 6 months, with sort of partying and drug abuse and going out with older men and things like that. And she had got to the stage when she was ready to go to rehab. And just they all seemed, like I say, in tune with their emotions and taking on board what they were going through and what they needed to improve their lives. And I think it's about finding the spark that's within every child and young person, however that may be, however small it is. It doesn't need to be some huge amazing talent where they're going to be famous. It could just be that they're wonderful with children or very caring, or, you know, could be academic, could be musical, could be sports. But like I say, finding that spark and igniting it and really believing in the young people, because if we don't believe in them, how can they believe in themselves?
Just going to come in with a couple of questions here. I have many, but I'm conscious of the time. And you know, maybe I'll direct the first couple of questions to Gabriel. But Claire and Dougie, please, as I say, feel free to come in at any point. There's a couple of interesting kind of turns of phrase that Claire and Dougie used. One was over in Denmark. They saw pedagogues going with the flow of the child. And I think it was clear, it was also how noticeable it was that the professionals and the young people were fitting within a rhythm of the day. I'm just wondering that these are two turns of phrase which I think many people would recognise as not existing in your typical Scottish schooling or nursery environment, Gabriel. I don't know if you maybe want to say a bit more about what that looks like, or maybe more importantly, what can we do to take steps to get to that? Maybe for those of us that might never benefit from actually going through an immersive experience such as a study trip.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting phrase, really, the idea of going with the flow. I've seen a lot of different placements in Denmark because I had that opportunity to kind of be one step removed. So I spoke a lot to the people that had been on the placements, and I went around to each of the placements. And one of the things I picked up in all those settings was very much professionals talking about process, talking about being in tune with the children and the young people, and really being able to go with the flow. I think a lot has to do with them trusting that if we put our focus, our emphasis on actually being with the children, on that process, on learning together with them, then the outcome is going to be as good as it can possibly get. Because in that process, in that flow, we kind of ignite that spark, as Claire was saying. You know, we have that opportunity to really kind of understand their potential, help them see their potential, and to actively build on it, which we don't have if we're only concerned with the actual outcome at the end, and thereby sometimes lose sight of the process. So it can look many different ways. That being in the situation, being in the flow, I think it means that we need to really be in tune with the other person, really get to know their unique individuality, their personality, and kind of understand where are they at, what might be a good thing for them to kind of develop from here, you know, what might be the next thing that they might want to learn, that they might want to do that would be beneficial for them. You know, if they've just managed to climb a tree, then maybe they've now got the physical things, physical skills, sense of balance that would help them refine their sense of balance in a different situation. So, you know, it might be that, as Claire was saying, you know, you'll do some yoga with them, which, again, kind of sharpens their sense of balance, but in a slightly different way to tree climbing. So it's just about really understanding and wanting to find out where's that child, not just in terms of their cognitive development, but also their emotional development, their social development, and what can we do to further enhance that development to help them realise that.
I would just add that I think the key word for me is equality. And to achieve what Gabriel was talking about, there has to be equality between management and the professional, and all the way down to the young people, and allowing them to have their voice. I think if we can achieve that, we're here. I think we're well on the way to doing it. And my experience in my organisation anyway, then we can get more of these conversations about what they want to achieve in their own lives and what success for them will actually look like.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think it's about respecting each child as a unique individual or young person as a unique individual. And, you know, we have expectations of where we think young people should be at, what, you know, where should they be with their emotions, what work we should do with them. And, yeah, to a certain extent, you have to plan things. But if that young person isn't ready for that particular piece of work, what's the point in forcing it on them? You have to really listen to the young people, and not just about what they're saying, but, you know, taking in their body language, their facial expressions, how nervous are they, how anxious are they, and there's no point trying to force a certain piece of work on a child or young person if they're just not in the place to take that on board. And it may be that you have to, you know, go a slightly different path, a slightly different route, and you'll end up probably getting to the same goal, but just doing it in a way that that individual young person needs to go at that particular time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes it was very little things that the pedagogues were doing. I remember one participant was really impressed when she was at an after-school club, and a young boy was running up and down the corridor, and the pedagogue, rather than telling him off for running and saying, don't run, said, you know, it's okay to walk here. And that kind of positive reframing of essentially the same message really kind of made that boy stop and then kind of understand it, whereas, you know, if we told him off, he would just dismiss that. He wouldn't want to hear that, or he might not even be able to kind of understand what's he not allowed to do. So, you know, what is he supposed to do? But by reframing, it's okay to walk here, you kind of gave him that opportunity to see, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, without forcing it upon him.
Definitely, and that's about empowering the person rather than dictating from above, I think, which comes back to equality. And I think I would definitely, I've not mentioned yet, but I definitely want to mention Marshall Rosenberg's work on non-violent communication. And I think that that was something that I witnessed across the board with every pedagogue I worked with over there, that their ability to dissolve conflict in particular, but just their general communication skills, were very much focused on being open and non-conflictive. And since coming back, I've read quite a lot about this Marshall Rosenberg he's an American chap who has this non-violent communication theory. And I would encourage anyone out there that wants to resolve conflicts, whether professional or personal, in a more peaceful manner, to look his stuff up.
Just got one final question. I mean, all three of you have spoken so passionately about social pedagogy, and I'm just wondering if you have, you know, do you have a message for either the politicians in Holyrood, or, you know, managers in a more local level, or even the colleagues that you work with day in, day out? You know, what, I suppose it's, you know, what should they be doing better or differently, or what kinds of professional development opportunities should come to the fore? How can this approach that you've spoken so passionately and eloquently about, how can it spread? And possibly when you've each had a chance to answer that, it would be nice to finish with Gabriel just mentioning one way in which it obviously is being done, which is through this this development network.
All right. That's a really profound question, and I think there's probably no quick answer, but I would say that I firmly believe that we have really great professionals in this country that are passionate about what they're doing, in the same way that I'm passionate about social pedagogy. I think some of the achievements that Danish pedagogues are able to make with those children, young people, are possible because of the culture and the system they work within. You know, Danish social welfare is very much family orientated. It's very much about supporting the entire family, not just focusing on child protection and just on the individual child. It's very much about early intervention. And there's a lot of trust in the professionals to be able to actually make good decisions that are in the best interest. I think we in this country need to trust our professionals, that they actually have a lot of professional and personal skills that they bring with them. Obviously, you know, being a social pedagogue and having gone through 3.5 years of studying, that's an enormous amount of theories that you can use then to guide your reflection, to structure the way you work. It's an enormous amount of methods that you can pick up to creatively engage with children, young people. And I think it really shows the value that society places on people that work with children and young people. And I think, you know, every professional deserves that kind of status in this country as well, because, you know, this is a hugely important job for society, and it should be valued as such. So I think my key message is that we need to value our professions more, and I think we need to do whatever we can to increase the status. And I think social pedagogy has something to offer, because it does give that kind of holistic framework that gives people the opportunity to bring in their personal in a way that is also professional. And to really draw on that passion that professionals bring with them. So not to say, well, you have to be professional and, you know, leave aside all those personal values and those emotions. No, that's a strength that we can draw on. And I think we need to encourage participants, practitioners in this country to kind of, yeah, be able to bring that in, to bring in their personal skills and, yeah, to help them become confident in who they are.
That's absolutely.
Sorry, Dougie. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I was just going to be very short and sweet and add that I agree with everything Gabriel said, and I think any encouragement I would want to give to my colleagues is just that it's going to be, I'd use an open cliche, be the change you want to see in the world, and be confident about the judgments you make. And if you have loving intentions and caring intentions, that you know, be more confident in what you do, and continue to try and enjoy the job, because it is one of the most inspiring jobs to work with young people. And so, if there's anything that's getting in the way of you enjoying that, seek resolution with it in as non-conflictive a manner as possible and as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say after those two now. It was a difficult question to answer, and I think they both really covered it pretty well. But yeah, I certainly agree with Gabriel. It's having the value put on the jobs. We all do an amazing job, and I would particularly like to say about foster carers who I support. I think a lot of people see foster carers as, oh, they're just looking after the kids, you know, they're not doing any bigger job than parents. But foster carers, I think, are one of the most important sections, if you like, of childcare. They do an amazing job. It's 24/7. And foster carers as well as residential child workers, myself as a fostering support worker, our job should be valued because I think we do an amazing, really important job, just as important as teachers who have that status. I think the social and emotional work that we do with young people is just as important as, you know, the educational side. Well, it's all education anyway. So that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Thanks very much, Claire. And Gabriel, just to finish up, if you could introduce listeners to the network.
Yes, thanks. We've wanted, as Dougie said, be the change you want to see in this world. We've wanted to create an opportunity for professionals to really be able to do that. So a couple of years ago, and together with the Thomas Cohn Research Unit in London and Jacaranda, we set up the Social Pedagogy Development Network. Basically, that is a forum for anyone who has an interest in social pedagogy, who might have you know, not come across it before, or who might have had lots to do with it, or who might say now, well, this is kind of what I'm doing as well, so I'd really like to kind of learn more to be able to share what I'm doing and so forth. For these kinds of people to really just come together, to engage in dialogue, to be able to share their learning, to be able to learn from each other and to build relationships, because basically that's what social pedagogy is all about networking, about really building more of an alliance for making a difference for children and young people. So the SPDN meets about 2 to 3 times a year in different parts of the country, depending on which organization we can find to host an SPDN meeting. They're always for free, so people can just come and attend them. They'll need to register, of course, but there's no charge. The next SPDN event is in Sligo on the 24th of May in the evening, and on the 25th of May, which is an all-day event. And then we've got an SPDN meeting in Aberdeen, which will be hosted by the Camp Hill community there, on the 18th and 19th of October. And I'd just like to really invite whoever's listening and would like to come. You're more than welcome to. The details about that are on our website, which is www.thempra.org, and there's also registration details and stuff like that, so you can find out more, or you can email me as well.
Okay. That's fantastic, Gabriel. Thank you so much. Just bring the show to an end now. I'd like to thank Claire Jackman, Dougie Gould and Gabriel Eisteller for taking time out of their busy lives to take part in tonight's Radio EduTalk. The archive will be available for anybody to access at edutalk.cc later on this week. So thanks again to our guests, and until next time, take care.